Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome live to another edition of Carson's Corner, the MMA show. My name is Bob Carson, and if you want to be a part of the program, you can give me a call at 347-326-9749. That is 347-326-9749. We also have the chat room open for you as well, and we're supposed to be hearing from Drew Fickett today. You know, we've been trying to land him on the show for a couple weeks now, and you know, Drew's been on the show many times in the past, and I was watching Insidious 2 today, right, in the theaters. And by the way, Insidious 2 was, it wasn't a good movie. I'm telling you, I'm not going to recommend it to anybody. I loved the first one, which came out in 2010, but this one, the storyline was all over the place. It was difficult to follow, and I'm going to have to give a big thumbs down to Insidious 2. And Drew Fickett texted me, and he said he wants to call in today on the show, 6 p.m. his time, which is 9 p.m. my time. And I said, absolutely. You know, we're just waiting for you to call in. And so hopefully he's going to call in here. If he doesn't call in, I'm going to try to call him because we really have to get him on the show. But if nothing happens, I'm probably going to end the show at about the half-hour mark because I got some stuff to do. I got to go food shopping. I got a lot of other stuff to do. I can't wait around all day, you know, if he doesn't call in right away. We have some questions for him, as always. He's a good guy. We, you know, obviously everybody is familiar, I think, with the story of Drew Fickett. This was a remarkably successful fighter who really started off his career with a bang. 12-0. You know, he was going to be on the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, and he lost to, or he beat Kenny Florian in a local show. Dana White saw him, and then eventually when he went into the UFC, he actually was able to beat some pretty high-profile fighters. Kurt Pellegrino, Josh Koscheck, I never forget that fight, winning via triangle choke very late in that fight. Josh Neer. And then after that, his career, he's really been on a roller coaster. You know, he's been incarcerated. I believe he was incarcerated before he was in the UFC, but everybody is really aware of Drew's struggle with substance abuse, alcohol. You know, he's tried different things. He owns his own business now. And he's kind of had a difficult couple of years fighting. You know, when he fought for the MFC, he won a couple fights there. And then he got dropped from the promotion. And now he's just kind of fighting, you know, wherever. He's still training. And, you know, that's good. It certainly is. Obviously, I don't know if his heart is really into the sport as much as it was, you know, when he was a little younger. But, you know, it's good to see him still training. I'm just anxious to hear what's going on with Drew Fickett. It's been a while since we have had him on the show. I, like you, saw the Mayweather Canelo Alvarez fight, and we don't follow boxing as much as we do MMA. Okay, it's I'll only get a fight if it's a big fight, if it's a big pay-per-view attraction. But I got to tell you, Mayweather is—it's becoming it looks like a mismatch every time he's out there. And it's, who do you want to see him fight at this point? I mean, do you want to see him fight Pacquiao? Does anybody believe that Mayweather would lose to Manny Pacquiao at this point? you know, who is he going to fight? How much longer can this continue? It's almost as if you don't even want to spend pay-per-view money. And the pay-per-view was $64 in HD net, or HD, $64, which is just, it's absurd. And it was just, it looked like a total mismatch. It really did. And that's not taking nothing away from Canelo Alvarez, who I think is the future of that division, but nobody wants to see this anymore. It's becoming tiresome, you know, and it's a real credit to his skill. And here's another thing that's interesting about Floyd Mayweather. My brother-in-law was telling me this, that recently, I believe it was in Sports Illustrated magazine, they showcased all of the top grossing athletes, and they show how much they make in endorsements and how much they make, you know, playing their particular sport. Well, Floyd Mayweather gets zero in endorsements, which is just absolutely amazing. You know, I think he was guaranteed something like $90 million for his last fight, and zero is from endorsements, according to this article. And I think that's remarkable. It really is. It shows you that he knows how to get paid, and that's the whole idea of Money Mayweather. Well, he does have a lot of money, and he got a lot of money for his fight on Saturday. And I haven't seen any pay-per-view numbers, but we're going to keep our eye on that. Also this week, you got the UFC, and we're all very excited about the main event, John Jones versus Alexander Gustafsson. Nobody's giving Gustafsson a chance to win this fight. Everybody's basically saying it's going to be a one-sided, you know, beatdown, whatever. I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen too many of Gustafsson's fights, to be honest with you. I know he's got the one lone loss to Phil Davis, I believe via anaconda choke. And he hasn't fought that many big guys. You know, of course, his fight versus Shogun looked very impressive, but he didn't dominate Shogun the way that John Jones dominated him. And so, you know, I think John Jones would be the favorite, but you never know. You know, this is a guy who has physicality, obviously, and it wouldn't shock me. It would not surprise me if he won the fight, Alexander Gustafsson. You know, John Jones coming off of the toe injury, you know, he hasn't fought in a little while, and I would never count out Alexander Gustafsson. With that said, let's see if we can go to Drew Fickett here. Obviously, it's past 9 o'clock, and we haven't heard from him yet, so hopefully we'll be able to reach out to him now and get him on the show, because that's what we do here. We want to get him on the show and ask him the great questions that we ask our guests here on Carson's Corner. So just hang on. I'm going to try to call him right now. Hello? Actually, let me try another number here. Actually, I believe somebody just me a voicemail, but unfortunately, where I'm broadcasting now, I have no signal, so I can't receive phone calls. It just goes straight to voicemail. That could have been him for all I know. I don't know, but I'm going to try to call him now on a different number, and we'll see if we can get him here on Carson's Corner.
Hi. Thank you for calling Tucson Kratom. If you're receiving this message, we are probably out on delivery or helping another customer. You can get more information or place an order at www.tucsonkratom.com. Or if you'd like to text a question or order, 520-867-0677. Thank you for calling Tucson Kratom. Have a great day.
Well, at least we got to hear his voice. Drew, this is Bob Carson. I'm live on the air. Give me a call, 347-326-9749. 347-326-9749. Thank you. At least we got to hear Drew Fickett's voice. That's I thought he was live on the phone with me. So we got some Dan Quinn news here regarding his trial. I spoke to Joan. I did an update with Dan on the 6th, and it was a short update, and I was talking about this on my political show, that Dan, he kind of was impatient because he buys minutes, and he can't waste too many minutes, and I never know when Dan's going to call me, okay? If I'm home and I'm able to record, I'll pick it up. But sometimes Dan will call me, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And so, you know, if I don't know when he's calling and I have no reception in my bedroom, I have to take the laptop out to my living room. And when I unplug the laptop from my charger, the laptop automatically shuts off. I don't know, some sort of power shortage. And so it's going to take about 3 or 4 minutes to set up now. And sometimes, you know, Dan wants to start recording right away, but I can't do that because the laptop has to boot up again. And so we ended up recording for about 10 minutes because it was late at night. And then Dan called me a couple days after and said he didn't want me to play the recording. Oh, let's go to Drew. This is Drew right here. Drew, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
Hey,
hi,
what's
Bob.
Up,
how
my
you
friend?
Doing, brother?
Good. How are you today?
I'm good, man. I just realized you gave me a special number to call in. So, okay, I'm going to call that one.
Yeah. This is the hotline.
The help hotline, right? Help for getting me out of wrestling practice because I'm dying.
Yeah.
I can't keep up with these 15-year-old kids anymore, man. Like, even the fat ones, they beat me in a full-out sprint. It doesn't even matter if they're in shape, on 5 Twinkies. It makes no difference. They're young and they're fast.
That's amazing, man. New fighters coming up.
Yep, definitely. Well, the generation now is ridiculous. I mean, you got kids training from the time they're young, like 5, 6, 10-year-olds, they're like, oh, they know all about MMA. It's insane.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're coming off of a fight against Andre Winner in what I think was the first ever Global Warrior Challenge event. And that name sounds like something that would be written on the side of an arcade cabinet for a 1990 Street Fighter game. But
right?
My understanding, the card was a pretty big show, or at least it was intended to be. Can you talk to folks at home about what happened and what sort of, you know, crowd attended and so forth?
Yeah, we have an event called Global Warrior Challenge, which pits Team USA versus other countries around the world. Originally, the first show was Team USA versus Team UK, and we had quite a few good name fighters from the United States versus a bunch of really good guys from the UK, and it was a really good card. Unfortunately, I mean, Team USA got absolutely smoked, so we definitely have our work cut out to train a little more and get on the same page as an actual team. But, you know, the show went on, and we had a little some speed bumps here and there, but it's looking smoother and smoother, and we're ironing out the details, and we're looking to fight Team Brazil in December, so I'm really excited about that.
So Global Warrior Challenge is definitely a legit promotion doing some positive things in the world of MMA.
Yeah, I mean, Global Warrior Challenge is a very positive promotion. It's owned and run by a mom and pop, good Christian family, and they're just trying to really do something special in the sport of MMA and not just make a quick buck, but have this really cool idea that involves, like, Team USA concept versus other countries and really get, like, some national appeal behind the sport of mixed martial arts.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's something that we definitely need more of. I thought they had solid matchmaking for a first event. I mean, you know, we could talk about the rest of the card in a minute, but let's discuss your fight with Andre Winner first. Obviously, the result wasn't what you wanted, but from reading the play-by-play, it seemed like you held your own against Winner. It was a 29-28 fight on most online scorecards I saw. Can you take us through the fight and how it went from your perspective?
Yeah, it was. First of all, I just really was able to put everything together because, you know, through all my ups and downs throughout my career, I finally have started putting together my striking game, and I felt really on point with my striking and my wrestling and everything. And it was a really fun fight to be able to get in there and go toe to toe with a very solid stand-up fighter. And I felt definitely like I held my own. I felt like I won a round in there, and another round could have gone either way. But at the end of the day, I had a really good time, and it was fun, and I was in really just put all my skills together, and I'm never in any danger of getting hurt, which has been my MO of the striking game. I've been losing because of my failure to put my striking game together. But I definitely feel more confident in it, and I'm really excited to get back in there. And I just thought that was a great fight. It was definitely fight of the night, and I really feel confident that I'm able to get in there with that level of competition and still be able to compete, especially after, you know, everything I've been through the last few years.
Yeah, Winner has great takedown defense, but I know you got him down several times. Do you feel like you made any errors?
Surprisingly so, he has really good takedown defense. And actually, I never took him down. He grabbed the cage a couple times in the first round where I would have got a takedown, but that's neither here nor there. At the end of the day, I didn't get him down. And I was just like, wow, like I couldn't get the guy down. And that was the difference in the fight, honestly.
Oh, really? Okay. And yeah. As you mentioned, you know, he's known as a hard hitter and someone who could put people to sleep, but you seemed able to handle everything that he threw. How did you rate his power relative to other, you know, fighters you faced?
I mean, as I start learning more about striking, it's not really so much about power, so to say, as the placement of the punches and their timing. And I would say his timing was, you know, pretty good, but my defense is, you know, really, really world class now, and it's going to be hard for someone to put more than one punch together on me. I'd say he hit me 4 or 5 times, but he wasn't able to string together more than one punch at a time. And, you know, he hit hard. Everybody hits hard that's at this level and that's an athlete, so I could definitely see him putting some people to sleep that don't have the kind of defense that I have.
Right. I know in some of your recent fights that you've been caught early in, on and stopped. We've discussed your struggles both in and out of the ring on previous shows, and I know your fighting has been directly influenced by some of your personal issues. Was there something which changed about you, either physically, technically, or mentally, which led you to become more vulnerable to fighters who start fast?
You know, I think it's just the lifestyle I was living. You know, I had a real problem with drugs and alcohol, and it influenced my training, it influenced my mentality, and it just carried over into the sport. And I mean, you just, you know, that kind of lifestyle, not living healthy and good and caring for your body and getting all messed up psychologically, that doesn't mix with fighting world-class guys like Jamie Farner and and Ronnie Torres. And, you know, it worked for me a couple times, and it kind of spoiled me because I was able to get in there and fight, you know, messed up or practically drugged out, beat some world-class guys. So, yeah, that kind of ruined me. In a way, I was like, oh, well, I can get away with it. But at the end of the day, it caught up with me, and I'm glad it did because it taught me a lesson. And honestly, those losses have nothing to do with me as I am as a fighter, and technically, like, that would never happen again as of right now.
Do you feel any decline at all in your punch resistance? I mean, is that something which any human being has to deal with as they age?
I don't. Like I said, I was on a lot of substances, and my psyche was really messed up. I mean, I was drugged out and drunk, and, you know. So I think that will, you know, anything will blow me over. You know, I mean, you fight someone like that, it's going to be easy to knock them out. But when I'm in full form and 100%, I think I've been able to take more because I've learned the little details that I never realized about striking. Like, it's as technical and subtle in the details of defense as it is on the ground. And if you know how to act and you know how to react to punching and where to be and position yourself, you really don't get hit. And when you do get hit on camera, people don't understand the subtle, like, little things that are going on. Like, they see Mayweather, for a great example, Mayweather and Canelo the other night. You know, they're seeing Canelo punch him, and I just hear the announcers, like, saying, oh, Canelo lands a right hand. He wasn't hitting him. He was hitting his shoulder, or he was in a position where the punch didn't even hit him. But to the naked eye, it looks like, he punched him. No,
right.
He didn't. He barely got hit the whole fight, but to someone that doesn't know, it looks like they're hitting them, but they're really not. There's these little tiny details, and it's fascinating. I've gained a really newfound love for the sport of striking and boxing, and I'm really excited to get better at it because I think once I master it offensively, it's going to be over.
You know, Drew, you have a good point about the Mayweather-Canelo fight because, from my understanding, the judges, even the announcers, they presumably had, you know, a small circuit television. They had some sort of screen where they could see in there, I would think. But the judges had no type of screen, so they're watching this fight, you know, with the human eye, with their naked human eye. And they could potentially miss a shot that may have appeared to have landed but may not have. And certainly if that's the case for judges who are trained to, you know, observe these fights, then that's got to be the case with people at home, and myself included.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand it. Like, it was obvious that there's no possible way that Canelo won more than two or three rounds. And that's
right.
Being favorable. That judge that scored it a draw, I mean, it's not just a bad call, it's corrupt. And those guys are, like you said, they're trained to watch and to score these fights. I mean, I still consider myself an amateur-level boxer, and I can see with my eyes what's going on. These guys have years and years and probably thousands of rounds that they've witnessed these fights and learned to you know, see the discrepancies of a hit and not hit, and when someone's hurt and when someone's scoring. And it just, it's crazy that they can't make the right call. It doesn't make any sense. It almost makes me think like that judge had money on the majority decision or something.
Yeah. It was, we were all surprised when we heard that scorecard being read. You're also, obviously, you alluded to this. You had a great career run. I mean, beating guys like Carlo Prater, Dennis Hallman, Kenny Florian, Josh Neer, Pellegrino, Josh Koscheck, and many others. But in a way, does that sort of record inevitably burn out a person? I mean, you know, those are just beating that level of competition being able to keep up with that record seemed like it could be a daunting task.
I mean, really what burned me out was the poor decision in my choices of lifestyle, you know, with drugs and alcohol, and I'm just hanging out with the wrong people and getting around the wrong energy. But when you go, for example, fighting in the UFC, great competition, I mean, you better train because you're not just motivated, but you're going to get your butt kicked if you don't train at that level. When you go from that level and then all of a sudden you're fighting B-level fighters, C-level fighters, and you're not making any money, not that the money, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And you go, you have such a drop in competition, it's just, it's hard to get motivated. And then you're not motivated, and then once in a while you get like a world beater fight, and then you're just like, well, you know, I beat these bums, but I didn't really train that hard. You just didn't have a habit. You're in a, you know, routine. We're creatures of habit and routine, and you're just used to not training for fights. So then all of a sudden, you know, like, I don't train for a fight against Jamie Varner. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah.
It just, it doesn't make any sense. But at the end of the day, you know, I've really rededicated myself to the sport. And win or lose, you know, I could care less now. I really love the sport, and I'm excited to compete. And I've surrounded myself with the Sunnyside High School Wrestling Team, which is a top 10 high school wrestling team in the country. And I'm an assistant coach there, and I train every day with them before I go to my boxing training. And it's really helped remotivate me and rekindle my original love for the sport, my original love for the game, if you will.
Would you say you had more problems recently with ground and pound type fighters, maybe in your pursuit of the quick submission finish, than you're known for?
Can you ask that question again, Bob?
Would you say you had more problems recently with ground and pound type fighters, maybe in your pursuit of the quick submission finish that you're known for?
Yeah, I think, you know, the technical aspect, my kryptonite of late has been the wrestler that can keep me off them and hurt me with strikes. I mean, if I can grab a hold of somebody, it's probably going to be a short night for them, especially if I'm trained. But the guys who, you know, learned, obviously they don't want to go to the ground with me because I just happen to submit people fairly quickly. Well, that's harder said than done. But if they're really good wrestlers, then it kind of gives them the advantage.
Yeah.
And like then, Justin, you know, I kind of got spoiled. Like after that Shine tournament and Matt Veach and even Cobb, like I was submitting people so easy, and it was like, pretty soon you're just like, well, do I really have to train that hard? I mean, it's like, it really spoiled me. And then, you know, pretty soon, and just, you know, personal stuff happened, and, you know, it was all downhill after a great run, which, you know, should have landed me back in the UFC and competitively been right there with anybody. But, you know, it was a good lesson, good learning lesson.
What about the rest of the Global Warrior Championship card? Was there anything which stood out as particularly good or bad to you?
The promotion itself was the greatest promotion I've ever fought for. Greatest treatment of the fighters. They were organized. They were on time. They paid us before we fought. They gave us cash before we fought. They made sure our accommodations were wonderful. And I mean, they just really, really cared for the fighters. Like, no BS. Like, they were on point, and they're looking to make it a great show, not a good show, a great show, and not to make a financial gain. I mean, everybody that, you know, wants to make money, and that's great, but they're not just about making the money. They would rather spend a little extra money and get the right matchups, then undercut some fighters and just, you know, do some stuff where it's kind of like two lesser fighters fighting each other because they can save a couple bucks. Like, they're willing to spend some extra money and go out and get the right talent to make it a world-class competitive event that people are going to be pumped to watch.
I know Rico Rodriguez has lost a lot of weight for his fight, but a lot of people felt like he didn't really perform well. He didn't do that much from what I could tell. I don't know if he was drained from the weight loss or whatever, but you must be able to relate to Rico in some ways as a fighter who's gone through ups and downs in your career and personal life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I saw him at Global Warrior Challenge, and he did look a little drained. And, you know, I talked to him a little bit, and he was going through some personal issues with his wife and his personal life. Like all of us fighters usually have a pretty fired up personal life with everyone that we're around. And, you know, I just pray for him, and I relate to anyone that's going through troubles, not just necessarily, you know, Rico and his predicament, but, you know, I just feel like being a fighter, we just put so much pressure on ourselves that when it comes to dealing with regular pressures, it's like, it's really tough. It's really, really tough. And on a side note, it was a really sad day for all of us into the Tucson community and my team personally. Yesterday, my 125-pounder, Freddie Lux, took his life yesterday after an argument with his wife. And
oh, man.
He left three children, three estranged children, behind, and it was just really sad. Yeah.
Was he a part of the wrestling team or was a fighter?
He was a fighter. He was a fighter with Team Scrub, and I think he was like 6-1 as an amateur. He was one of Anthony Burchak's main training partners, and he just was going through a lot of personal stuff. And he also had a head injury that might have had some play with, you know, what happened. And it's just really sad and really unfortunate. A lot of us are grieving his loss, and he'll be in our prayers.
Yeah. How old was he?
I have to say he's about 26
yeah.
years old.
That's any time you hear something like that happen to anybody, it's really tough.
Yeah, it's always unfortunate, especially, you know, he had a family, and it's not like he was a bad dad. Like he was an excellent, amazing dad. So for him to make that choice, it was just like, man, I just, all of us, including Anthony, wish there was something we could have said, or somehow like we could have helped him get this weight off that ended up being his demise. I don't know. It just makes you question. Things like that make you question our existence, right?
Yep. Absolutely. Drew, what would your message be to fighters who are struggling with the later stages of their career, trying to put some wins together?
I would say stop putting so much pressure on yourself. I mean, as a veteran, and any veteran that's had, you know, any amount of success in the sport, you know how to succeed. You know exactly what it takes to succeed. You know the kind of focus it takes to succeed. And just like I've been doing for Global Warrior Challenge and Team USA with Global Warrior Challenge, is I've been rededicating myself to the sport. Not for a paycheck, and not because I need to string some wins together so I can get back in the UFC and people will like me. No, I love the sport, and I want to still be able to do this for some time. And if I didn't love the sport, it's time to stop. But if you do have some love for the sport, find that initial, like, childhood love that got you into the sport. Stop chasing the money. Stop chasing everybody else's opinions about why you should or shouldn't fight. And just get back to, like, what originally made you passionate about, you know, your love for fighting.
That's what my advice would be.
What's next for Drew Fickett? Do you have any fights lined up?
Yeah, I'm actually team captain of Team USA for Global Warrior Challenge. And I'm excited because we have Dennis Hallman, Benji Raddick, Jeff Munson, John Gunderson, Tony Harvey, among others. And we're fighting Brazil. It's going to be called the Brazilian Battle. And it'll be sometime in December. We still have a venue to be figured out. And I originally had a fight scheduled with Macaco, which I thought would be a dream matchup, not just for the fight, like me and him, but for the fans. I think that would be a real fan favorite fight. Unfortunately, I think he's fighting in Legacy, so I'm going to get that matchup maybe outside of Global Warrior. But for right now, who's the 55-pounder? He beat Imanari, Fermina. Does that name sound familiar?
Are we talking about in Global or in...
For Global Warrior Challenge, Brazilian Battle, where it'll be Team Brazil versus Team USA, I'll be fighting, I think it's Luis Fermina. And he got a victory over Imanari, and he had a good fight with Kawajiri. The very skilled fighter. I'm very excited. I think he'll definitely draw out the best in me and make for an exciting fight.
Now, where can fans check out information on this card? Does Global have a website?
Yeah, I think it's GWCMMA.com.
Okay.
Or GWCFightsMMA.com. If you do a search for Global Warrior Challenge, you should be able to find it. And there's definitely a lot more information on my Facebook fan page, which is Drew Knight Rider Fickett. So if you're really trying to find the fight or more information about Team USA or the fighters, everybody can Facebook Drew Knight Rider Fickett and check that page out.
At this stage of your career, are you still looking to compete for a while, or are you planning to transition away from active competition and maybe draw down your number of appearances at some point?
Brother, I feel like I'm just getting started. I definitely have at least 10 more years in me, and I know if I take care of myself, I see guys like Bernard Hopkins and some of the other MMA guys, maybe I'll just keep going. Maybe I just will never stop.
Yeah.
Especially if I can compete against guys like Winter and, high level competition. I don't see a problem with still competing. It's probably the day that maybe I'll start getting hurt and I'm actually trained and ready for a fight and I can't compete at that level anymore. Then that's when I'll probably take a step back and be like, well, maybe I could set up some lesser competition fights to stop altogether. But right now I feel great, and I'm ready for whatever the sport has for me. And I'm really excited to fight in Global Warrior Challenge.
Well, you're a genuine fan favorite. I mean, we always get people asking when you're going to be back on the show. So I know, people really want to see you do well and, fight as long as you possibly can. How is your life going on a personal level? I mean, can you talk a little bit about your mindset and lifestyle at the moment?
Yeah, my personal life is great. I go to church 2 or 3 times a week, and I have really established a great relationship with God and my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And I don't really shove that down people's throats, but if people are interested, I love to talk about it. I love to bring them to church. And, if anything, if people aren't, true believers, I just think go to church anyway because there's a positive message. There's good people. I've just been surrounding myself with good, positive people, and the energy's really, really paid off for me because I'm staying out of trouble. I'm helping a lot of people around me. I'm an assistant coach at Sunnyside High School, and my fight team, who has been behind me through thick and thin, is now just super inspired and motivated, and they're just blossoming into some really great up-and-coming now pro fighters. So, you know, everything's coming together. You do the right things, good things are going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is the status of your battle against alcohol? I mean, how much of a struggle is it to avoid something which is sold and served almost everywhere?
You know, at first, I went to rehab last year for about 6 months. I've been sober over a year now, been a year and a couple months. You know, and at first, it's tough because it's always in the back of your mind, and we're all programmed to feel like it's okay to drink, and it's socially acceptable. And, you know, for some people, it is okay to drink because they can drink a couple and quit. Me, I'm going to drink the whole liquor store. Period. I can't have one. And realizing that, it's not okay for me to drink. And, you know, it just, it made me more aware. It made me realize that I have to be more mindful, not just of alcohol, but a lot of the other negative energy and negative people that are around us. And I've actually been more aware of that, and I've surrounded myself with so many more positive things in my life in regards to just looking out for the alcohol. Now that's really changed my entire perspective for the better, and it's definitely a blessing.
Well, is continuing to fight something which aids in your ongoing recovery?
I think definitely being an athlete and training and being knowledgeable about what I put on my body, diet-wise, and exercise. I think exercise and diet are so untouched when it comes to rehab and rehabilitation of, you know, drug and alcohol dependency. It's sad, and I think that needs to be touched more and based on more of like the recovery programs, because the body, you know, just scientifically needs good diet and needs to be, you know, cleaned out with exercise. And it just makes sense, and there's science to back it up. So, yeah, I'd say definitely fighting, and more importantly, being an athlete and having a consistent training regimen is one of the paramount things to my sobriety and has been to my recovery.
Yeah, I'm not really a drinker. I've never had a drink of alcohol as an adult, but I am very much a food person. And I know that any sort of alcohol dependence is really a nightmare scenario to escape from. My understanding is that people who try to quit drinking get shakes, anxiety, and maybe even cardiac problems, all that sort of stuff. Have you ever experienced any physical symptoms?
Yeah, I've definitely experienced withdrawals. I've had Grand Mal seizures. It's a nightmare. Alcohol is one of the only withdrawals from a substance that you can actually die from.
No, I didn't know that.
It's no joke. Not just psychologically, it's not just hard to get off, but your body physically becomes actually dependent on alcohol. So these, you know, hardcore addicts and alcoholics and poor, you know, homeless, I mean, they can't stop drinking. They really can't. Not just psychologically they can't, but physically their body craves it so much. It's like it is a drug, and it is like they become dependent on it. And it's just a sad situation. And it's even more sad that our society has made it so acceptable and programmed people into, you know, thinking that drinking with everything is okay and normal.
We have somebody from the Underground Forum that wants me to just continue to yell Knight Rider at you. Jack DeVry, or Jake DeVry.
Jake DeVry. Knight Rider! That's what I have to say to Jake.
Well, that was, you put a lot of energy into that one. Yep.
Well,
that's awesome.
Yell, you should see when the Tampa Bay Bucks play, man. I'm yelling all over the place.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's you're. Would you ever consider mentoring or getting involved with 12-step programs? You know, once you're further into your recovery at some point.
Yeah, and actually, I do go to 12-step programs, and I do have a couple people that I mentor and sponsor. And, you know, I believe that God will provide the people that need my help. And I've already ran into several people that, you know, God, thank you for putting them in my path. I've helped them gain sobriety. And hopefully, you know, with God's help and my experience, we can keep them sober. And I'm just, you know, that's the greatest satisfaction, is more than fighting or, like, any, like, award or accolade, is when you actually help someone, like, deeply help someone in their life overcome something like that. There's no more deeper gratification than that, honestly, as a human. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's really, really, I think, pleasurable to hear anybody say that they get solace in helping other people, because it is an ongoing struggle, and, you know, it's very, very detrimental. I mean, you know, we can look at all the problems associated with alcoholism. I mean, my father was an alcoholic, and he had quit drinking, you know, years before he died, but still, it still impacted his life tremendously.
Yeah, you know, it's just like crazy. If you talk to anyone like yourself, their lives have been deeply, deeply impacted by some sort of alcoholism on a personal level in their life. I don't think there's anybody, unless they're like living in some retreat, or they're like, you know, a recluse or something. Like, everyone's affected by it, and it's not getting any better. It really isn't. When I first got sober, I used an amazing prescription drug called Anabuse. And what that is you take it every day. It's a pill. And if you ingest any type of alcohol in your system, you get violently ill. And
wow,
it's a great deterrent for people, you know, initially trying to stop drinking. They can't control themselves, because more than anything, I mean, yeah, you get sick and you won't be able to consume alcohol. But for me, it was a psychological deterrent. It was like, okay, well, I'm going to take this pill. And it's so easy to just take a pill every day. But, you know, once in a while, I'd, you know, pass a bar, or my friends would, like, old friends would call me and be like, oh, you want to go out? And I'd be like, well, it's not even an option. I can go out with them, because I can't drink. Or if I, you know, don't want to be around, I cannot be around it. Or, you know, it's an immediate deterrent, because I take this pill and it's like, I can't drink. So it's not even, my cravings, like, completely went away. And it was amazing. It really helped me get me through the first, like, half a year, I would say. And it's really not that well known about. So I definitely encourage anyone that's really serious about quitting drinking to look into Anabuse. It's an amazing, amazing drug.
Well, listen, as bad as it must have been, I know I'm not alone by a long shot. And when I say that we all hope for the best for you, even beyond wanting to see you fight, I know the folks at home just want you to be well, whatever the status of your career is. What are you doing right now in terms of business? Do you have your own business?
I have a few businesses. Me and my girl, we have a tutoring company that she tutors kids. I basically set up the appointments for her, and she tutors kids, and she also teaches at her son's school. And I also have a business that's based on getting people off opiate prescription pain pills and heroin, and it's called Kratom. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's a plant related to the coffee plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely natural. And it's an amazing, like, supplement. It helps people with their you know, because the biggest thing about opiates and heroin is it's some of the most painful withdrawals. So people that actually want to get clean and sober, I mean, they really can't. They got, like you said, with the alcohol, the anxiety and the restlessness, and it's just lasts for days and possibly weeks on end. And that's why a lot of times people want to get off these opiates and these prescription medications that are socially acceptable because the doctor prescribed them, and they can't. They physically can't. So this kratom, it antagonizes a lot of the dopamine receptors, much like an opiate or the drugs would, except it's not a drug. It's literally like coffee, and it helps these people get clean and sober, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, I was wondering, because when I called your answering machine, I heard the kratom, and I was wondering what that was all about.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say this month I've helped people obtain their own sobriety. I'd say about 15 people this month have gotten off either pills or heroin using kratom from our business, which is just very fulfilling.
Yeah.
So between that and God, man, any opiate addict can get off their vice, that's for sure.
Well, before I let you get going, are there places where people can keep up with you? I know that you have a Facebook page. Are you on Twitter? Anything like that?
Yeah, I just got a Twitter account. It's at Ficket Drew. And my Facebook page is Drew Nightrider Ficket. And anybody that's interested in possibly using kratom, the plant, as an alternative to get off prescription pills or heroin or want to try that, they can reach my website. It's www.TucsonKratom.com.
Well, Drew, thanks again for coming on the show with us. It's been a couple of years since we had you on, and let's definitely do this in the future. Keep us posted about where folks can see it in action. We'll keep people posted as well, and we'll keep in contact with you. And best of luck in December when you fight.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. I just if anyone can really just support me and pray for our team, it's Global Warrior Challenge, GWC MMA.
There it is, folks. Drew Ficket, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and we'll touch base with you sometime down the road, my friend.
All right. Thank you, my friend. It's good to be on. Appreciate it.
Take care, Drew.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. That was Drew Ficket here. And you know, I got to tell you, I really get along with you. Really enjoy having you on the program. You know, you just, when you interact with people, you could just tell which people you get along with and which people, you know, Drew's in Arizona, I'm in New Jersey, but I'm sure if we were in the same state, we'd probably be friends, you know. And that's like that with a lot of Arizona fighters. You know, Eric Prindle is a very, very good friend of the show. I consider him a friend on a personal level. Shannon Rich, another guy that I consider a personal friend. And I used to kind of be friendly with Don Fry. I haven't spoke to him in a while. Remember when he used to come on the show? It was great. Don's a character. His appearances were legendary here on Carson's Corner. And some of the other shows, they tried to duplicate that with him. They tried to, you know, have him on every week. But there was nothing like the magic between Don Fry and Bob Carson right here on Carson's Corner. I want to give a big shout out to the folks in the chat room. David Levitt in the chat room. You know a great deal about David Levitt, his advocacy work for missing and parental stranger abductions. It's been legendary. We worked with David in the past of Speak Your Mind Radio, and you could actually friend David on Facebook if you go on my Facebook account, facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA, and then search for David Levitt as well. Want to give a big thanks to those listening on the Underground Forum. We love the Underground Forum. Every time we have a good show, we like to post about it on the Underground Forum. And that's where the heart of the MMA media is. That's where everything is. It's the underground forum. Not Sure Dog. You know, I'm not even sure if MMA Weekly has a forum. They used to have a forum. I don't know if they do, but it's always been the underground forum. And I got to tell you, Kirk Janis has, in my opinion, really remained true to his roots after all these years. You know, I mean, the underground is, as far as I could tell, I don't spend as much time on it as I used to, but it is still basically the same place before really the all the success of mixed martial arts. And, you know, you got to understand, Kirk Janis is probably under a tremendous amount of pressure from advertisers and you know, promoters, and as long as it can still be a place where you can interact with fighters and basically say whatever you want, that's great. That really is. And it's so important. And that website, that forum, has really been instrumental to us. I don't think we'd have nearly the name recognition. Not like, you know, we can compete with some of these shills like Ariel Helwani or, you know, this guy, that guy with the corporate funding, but nobody would know of this show or my name if it wasn't for the underground forum, and that's great. It really is, and we thank you, Kirk Jones. We got to have Kirk on the show. We've never been able to get him on the show, and we may try to have to put a lot of effort into that. And I know Kirk will come on the show. I know he's a big fan of the show. So that's really it. This is it for Carson's Corner. I had a good time. Thank you very much to Drew Fickett for the very candid interview. We always love talking to him. The real people's warrior, not Josh Berkman. It's Drew Fickett. He is the real people's warrior. So that's absolutely great. We'll keep tabs on him. Find out what happens at the next Global Warrior Challenge. Great concept. Great fighters, too. Jeff Munson, Benji Raddick. Who else? See, he was rattling off some names that are going to represent the United States. And they're doing some special things over there. So we'll have to keep tabs on it and update you. So that's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Like I said, you could friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. And if you're into politics, you can listen to my political show right here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. We're also on the commonsprojectnetwork.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.